Washington football. Woo! Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Burgundy Zone. I am your host, Kyle, and I am joined by my two co-hosts, Michael Hall and Michael Reed, but we are joined by Logan Paulson, former tight end of the Washington football team and NFL tight end. Logan, thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir. How are you doing?
Good, man. Thank you guys for having me back. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And the first thing, this show is called the Super Bowl Hangover, Mr. Paulson. So I have to ask you, what was your opinion of that game, how it went out? And what was your opinion of how it went?
Yeah, honestly, like at this point in my career, I'm a fan of good football games. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this was not a great football game, especially by Kansas City. I think if you look at, you know, went back and watched the All-22 of Tampa Bay. And if you kind of focus in on what they did, I think there's a lot to be, you know, for that football diehard fan to really get excited about. You know, the way they play defense, the kind of just beautiful play calling by Bowles in the throughout the game. I mean, he just seemed to kind of have a total beat on what they wanted to do offensively, you know, playing man-to-man early to kind of kill the RPO, then knowing when to kind of get out of that man-to-man coverage stuff, get into more coverage-based stuff, really took away Tyreek Hill. And then I thought the way they did their coverage, it matched so well with their pass rush. Obviously, Kansas City a little banged up on the offensive line, and that really, really showed. You know, I was obviously hoping for like kind of one of those like changing of the guard moments or a defense of the guard kind of moments, you know, late score, one quarterback gets the ball. Can they be that dynamic player that we all expect them to be? Yeah. And unfortunately, it didn't play that way. It just kind of turned into one team just looked incredibly sharp and one team didn't look quite as good. So.
Yeah, definitely got to give big credit to Todd Bowles. He definitely called a great game, like you said. So what were some things that you, in your opinion, that Kansas City could have done offensively to kind of negate that pass rush of Tampa Bay or kind of negate some of the things Todd Bowles was throwing at him?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting. Like in their got to have it kind of running situations throughout the season, what they've done is they've relied on Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not saying like as a runner, but to run the RPO stuff. If you look at both Bills games, they kind of go to that stuff. The Bills basically said, you're not going to beat us deep. Hmm. And in both games, Kansas City leaned heavily on the RPOs, and I don't know why he did it, because he didn't do it all the time. He kind of knew exactly when the RPO situation was going to come up, played press coverage on the outside and took away those reads. They played in those two linebackers for Tampa Bay are outstanding football players, football players, so fun to watch. And I think that kind of shows you as a Washington football team fan, what two elite players at that position can give you. So, you know, just exquisite game as regarding that RPO stuff. And then kind of knowing when to get away with it. You know what I mean? Knowing when to kind of pull all your chips out and be like, hey, now we can play coverage. Now we can rely on our pass rush. And then as the game went on, Kansas City had to get further and further and further away from their game plan, which early looked RPO, kind of take a shot. They were in very poor third and down situations, third and long kind of constantly, which is, I don't care who you are, is a tough situation. And then especially when you're playing two kind of backup tackles and you're playing a backup guard, you know, they had to move three people to kind of accommodate those injuries on the offensive line. It just bodes disastrous. And then to kind of compound the whole thing, you know, you got JPP and Shaq Barklett. How do you say his name?
Barrett.
Shaq Barrett. Who are both really dynamic, prolific pass rushers in their own right. And so not only is it tough sledding in any third down situation, but you got to go against those two beasts on the outside. So.
Yeah, I think Todd Bowles and that defense was embarrassed from the first time that they played Tampa Bay, to be completely honest. I mean, you saw Antoine Winfield Jr. getting Tyreek Hill's face doing the peace sign. And he said it's because he did that to him and backflipped into the end zone. what did you – now, I know a lot of people were disappointed kind of in Patrick Mahomes' performance. Nobody expected him to not score a touchdown. Right. That was crazy. But what did you see from him? Did you see anything that Chiefs fans can really kind of – I know they've – it's Patrick Mahomes, but that they could still be like, all right, well, maybe this guy can still perform on the biggest stage. He made some incredible throws.
Right.
Did he still, obviously he didn't do enough to win. He played a great defense, but do you think?
No, I think, great defensive performance. I thought they got forced out of their game plan early, and that's always tough. It's always tough to kind of be in the gun, slinging darts against a team that knows what you have to do and knows you can't do anything else to get back in the game. Right. So looking at that game and watching it, I think – I've never been so excited to watch incomplete passes by Patrick Mahomes. You know, a guy diving and doing the dodgeball, like throwing a ball, like just the amazing arm talent that that guy has. And just, I think the other thing that was really spoke to me, I haven't watched a ton of him this year, a little bit, you know, but I haven't like watched him.
Right.
And to see how competitive he is, you know, like mm-hmm. how he was like, we are going to win this football game. I'm going to do whatever I possibly can to make that happen. I thought was really cool. Cause he's kind of got like, to me, that team is kind of a fair weather team in a lot of ways. They win big. They have like all these explosive weapons. And so for your main guy, your main leader on the team to kind of just be scrapping and running around and trying to do everything in his power to make that happen, I thought was pretty cool. So if I'm a Kansas City fan, obviously not really pumped off that result, but I do think like, you know, there were some intangible things that he showed that maybe I haven't seen before before this game.
Yeah, one of the funniest memes I saw from Sunday night was the Day-Day from next Friday, and they were saying that's what Pat Mahomes was like on Sunday night. And that's exactly right. He was running for his life. But a lot of the like fan base, especially the Chiefs fan base, and I saw a lot of this going through Twitter. Before we move on to the Washington football team and their offseason, do you think that the refs were playing any favorites in that game? I know you being an offensive player, a former tight end, how did you think that they were calling that game?
Yeah, I mean, so I thought the first two holdings on Mike Evans, I thought the first one was a little ticky-tack. The second one that negated the interception, I thought was real. I thought that was, you're going to get called, especially where the ref's standing, he's looking right at you. I actually thought the one on Breland where he kind of fell on the guy on Mike Evans' legs, I thought that was a little ticky-tack too. That was a huge momentum swing. And then the one against Tyron in the end zone, I thought was a little, you know, it just depends on how the ref sees it. Like if you think about it from his perspective, he's got the angle and it looks like he bumped him pretty dramatically to get out of the way. Mm. And I will say this about Mike Evans. He manages to get a ton of pass interference calls. And I think it's just because he's a big guy. He's a physical guy. Guys try to grab on him and hold on him. And he's like this big visual for the referee. So he kind of gets some of that stuff. But I thought two of those, maybe three of those were a little borderline. And, you know, that's part of the game, in my opinion. Like you can't, everyone says that's, you can't control that variable. And as much as you want to control that variable, like my argument against that would be Kansas City, just play better on offense. You know what I mean? Don't get away from your game plan. Do what you have to do to win the football game. Don't look at those plays. Cause despite all of the adversity that defense faced, especially in the first half, giving up a score right before halftime, like they were still in the game. They got the ball at the end, the next kickoff, they could have gone down and scored. We've seen them do that hundreds of times, and they're only down by a score.
That's,
you know what I mean?
So Kyle was saying,
So it's as much as that everyone wants to point to that. And in the moment, I was like, man, that kind of takes something out of the game. When you look at the big picture, like those are three plays, right? And in the scope of a game, there's 60, 70 plays. They had plenty of opportunity to make plays and impact that game. So,
kind of mentioned someone earlier about Patrick Mahomes. He's kind of going to be scrappy. Do whatever he needs to do to win the game. Yeah. Another person that kind of got scrappy a little bit was Tom Brady. Had gotten in Tyrann Mathieu's face. Were you kind of surprised by that? Just because I guess like everyone sees Tom Brady's like such a huge competitor. So I know he's like a fiery guy. I know Skip Bayless calls him like Psycho T. That's his like alter ego or whatever. So Were you surprised by that?
No, because I've actually played with a whole bunch of guys. I played with Brian Hoyer, who backed up Tom Brady for a long time and said he's never been around a more competitive person, and that's at every level of his life. So I think everyone thinks, like, you don't play in the NFL for two decades and not have just a tremendous passion for the game. Like, we've all seen guys who are really good football players who just don't – like, they get to a certain point in their career and they just – they get those dead eyes and they just can't do it anymore from a competitive standpoint, physically, mentally, emotionally, it's not there anymore. And here is a guy who's done something totally impressive in the history of the NFL. And so you better believe he has a fire in his belly like nobody else. So I'm a little surprised he doesn't have like this Philip Rivers thing going on, because I'm sure that's in him all the time is to get kind of heated up like that. Right. So it doesn't surprise me the least. Like, I don't know what Tyron said to him. I'd love to be kind of figure out what was going on there, what they were talking about. But, it doesn't surprise me at all.
I was about to talk about that too, Hall. Thank you. Thank you there for taking that question. That was a good one. That game, the pass rush seemed to affect that game so much just from Tampa. It was just relentless. Everybody wanted to talk about their run defense coming into – I mean, they were the number one run defense in the NFL. But that pass rush seemed to get hot at the right time. How important is it to have a good pass rush?
I mean, I think we saw how good that pass rush is when they played the Washington football team. Now, they got to it a different way. They did a lot more blitzing. They kind of had more creative pressure packages, and it wasn't just straight up win. But I also think the Washington football team didn't give them, you know, 30-plus just straight pass rushing situations in a game. Right. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've been on teams. You know, I'm like a – I was like a pseudo O lineman when I played, like talking to Jake Matthews, Trent Williams, like those 2 minute obvious passing situations, third and longs, you know, like that's why those guys get paid so much money. And they are nightmares, even for the best guys in the league, because they know like literally everything is at that player's disposal, that pass rusher's disposal. And I cannot imagine, you've got your right guard playing tackle in the NFL. Like those guys, the angles are different. Everything's different. And those guys we talked about are really good pass rushers. They're not maybe like the top five, but they're definitely in the top 15, 10 guys, right?
And Shaq Barrett had 19 and a half last year.
Yes, right, exactly. No one talks about that, right? Yeah. He's a prolific guy. And so, and like JPP, like for all of his, you know, I was privileged to play against him a ton in my career.
Yeah, you blocked him a bunch.
He is a freak. He's a freaky, big, athletic human. And when he wants to, he can make you look silly. And he did. So I think just looking at that game, like, it doesn't surprise me. Those matchups were, like, red dotted for me the whole time. Yeah. And as the coaches of the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm kind of like – and, again, they had to get out of their game plan early, so we didn't see what they had to do. But I would have been like, man, we got to help those guys a little bit more than we did. And I think it showed, like, you know, why that was a concern for everybody in the country.
Right. And let's move on to the Washington offseason. We love the Super Bowl. It was a great time, as always. But in your opinion here, Logan, with all the quarterbacks that we've seen come out to fruition with all these trade talks and everything, what was your opinion on the Matt Stafford trade? Did you like the way that Washington offered a first and a third and that they kind of stood pat with that, or would you have offered more?
So I think the one thing about Stafford is I think he is a tremendous talent. I think he is one of the best talents in the NFL, but for whatever reason, his play just hasn't lived up to that talent. I mean, he does amazing things. I mean, the last six games of the season this year, I don't think you could find a better quarterback, to be totally honest. You know, that's even comparing him to Aaron Rodgers. Like, he was playing tremendously, you know, and he does this every once in a while. And you fall in love with him. I just don't know if he could elevate this roster, right? And this roster, you know, it's a good roster, not a great roster. You know, maybe not even good, maybe just like a C-plus, B-minus level roster, and they have a lot of holes to fill. So when you give up that kind of draft capital to a player that's really outstanding but can't elevate a roster that way, you're going to be stuck with this guy for a long time, right? So to me, him going to L.A. is a perfect fit, right? There's all these weapons around him. He's going to get really dynamic play calling in that Sean McVay offense. It's a perfect fit. And then get Goff out of there. That was the thing that was really hindering them, especially down the stretch. Perfect fit. Here, not so much. To me, a better fit here is like a Deshaun Watson, a guy who creates some kind of magic on his own, can elevate a roster, can do some pretty magical things, you know, like Cam Newton from 5 years ago, right? That kind of player that just makes everybody a little bit better. You know, even Peyton Manning, we saw that when he was at Tampa Bay, like, or no, Tom Brady, excuse me. Like, those types of players are really special, and that's when you kind of, I would move. And I don't know if I felt that way about Stafford, and he would have made the team better for sure. Do you get to where you want to be as a team and an organization giving up 2-3 firsts, whatever it ended up being? And my answer is no, I don't think so.
Right.
And sticking with the quarterbacks, I know there's reports out there that Washington might try to make a call about Sam Darnold, see if he's available. I know Twitter has been going crazy. They've been clamoring for a guy like Gardner Minshew out of Jacksonville. Just because he's a little bit cheaper, draft capital or whatever you got to give up for him. So, in your opinion, would you be more comfortable with a guy like Sam Darnold or Gardner Minshew versus maybe running it back with Alex Smith and maybe having a backup like Taylor Heineke and then draft a guy and have Alex Smith groom them?
Right. So, I think that you need – I think everybody knows you need to bring a quarterback in some capacity. And ideally, you'd like him to be a starting caliber quarterback, because as much respect as I have for Alex Smith and Taylor Heineke and all these guys on the roster, there needs to be improvement at the position. You know, like we talked about elevating the roster, and that's the one position you can kind of get right away and everybody gets a little bit better. And now do you say, who gives you that best opportunity? You kind of, for the price is right here. That's the ultimate goal, right? I doubt Sam Darnold's going to take a first to get out of New York, right? So if you get him for a second and a third, that's good money right there. And that's a very talented player. Like, when you turn on his tape, is there a lot to be upset about? Yeah, but is there that first round arm talent, that first round accuracy that's still there? Yeah. And if you're I'm Ron Rivera, and if I'm a coach, I say, maybe I can work this into the system and maybe I feel good about it. I feel like with Minshew, he's a guy who's a classic overachiever. He's a guy that's playing better than he probably should be, right? And like, when he comes here, he's like, in my opinion, he's like a Heineke. He's like an Allen. He's a good football player, a guy you want on your team, but is he your answer at quarterback? And I think Jacksonville has shown they don't believe that, and he's done great things for them. So why would we, as the Washington football team, go that way? So I think that would be my kind of perspective on those two specific players.
Right. I was going to end up asking you about compensation for Sam Darnold, but I think you kind of already answered that. I think we feel the same way. But you did an excellent thread on your Instagram account, which, by the way, if you haven't, go follow Logan on Instagram. On Antonio Gibson, and you said that Washington fans have a lot to be excited about moving forward, and that you could do a thread all day on him. Well, what do you see from him?
My guy. It's just,
even now I'm kind of speechless when I have to talk about him, because like everything you want in a back and a young player is there for you. He catches the ball well. He's really fast. He's a big body. Everything about him is exciting. You know, like every time he touches the football. He's a big play waiting to happen. I know that's a super big play, but the other thing that I love about his game is he's a physical runner, right? He breaks tackles, he makes people miss, and he understands, like, for all of his novelty to the position, how to run the football, you know, and he's learning and he's getting more dangerous each week. And you start at week one, you kind of go, and then it just get better and better and better and better. And all of a sudden you're like, holy cow, this could be a top five runner in the NFL. If he can stay healthy, right? And, like, if you think about it, who else would you put in there? You got Derrick Henry, Cooks, the kid in Jacksonville, maybe.
Right.
Elliott, you saw what he looks like without an offensive line. And think about the offensive line that Gibson was running around. A bunch of really good guys who played really hard. But, obviously, there can be a talent improvement there, right? So, it kind of makes you say, well, maybe, right? Maybe he could be something really, really special given the right scheme, given the right growth, and meaning he can and assuming he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and that being said, speaking of Antonio Gibson, one of the questions I wanted to pick your brain on, Logan, was what is your comfortability with the running back room? My father-in-law asked us a question about a week or so ago, saying, you know, you're one injury away from Antonio Gibson from this being a subpar group. So do you think that they should go and upgrade at some point through the draft or free agency in that running back room?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that my philosophy as a GM is anytime you can upgrade – with the meaning the price is right, you know, you're not giving up too much, you should upgrade, right? And I'm a big believer in accruing draft capital and then distributing that through the roster as you deem appropriate by drafting the best players available, right? Okay. And if you come down, like just as an example, like Derrick Henry fell to the second round and your Washington football team, like, make that pick, you know what I mean, with this room, because it makes that room better, makes the competition better, and pressure, you know, like it brings out the best in people in the NFL. And if it doesn't, I don't know if you want that guy in the room. So yeah, I think that yes, if it fits with kind of your draft evaluations, your offseason evaluations, then absolutely do it. But, you know, like looking at the room with McKissick and Gibson, I feel like they're pretty set. There's probably other areas that they can improve more quickly, you know, like kind of plug and play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm a big believer. Like, yeah, improve it. Do it if you can.
Right. Sticking with your GM philosophy, if you're the GM, Washington's picking at number 19 in this upcoming draft, what would Logan Paulson do?
So, yeah, I mean, it's tough because you don't know how it shakes out. 19 is like such a far away to go, right? And you got to kind of, well, like, you know, maybe you get a guy like a quarterback who falls to you and like he's your number one quarterback. Or maybe for whatever reason during the evaluation, one of those good offensive linemen trickles down. He's there for you at 19. Like, you take him, right? It's like Montez Sweat a couple years ago. Like,
yeah,
he just kept falling, and all of a sudden he's there. It's like, yeah, I'll take a really good football player at this spot. So, that's the thing about 19 that makes me really kind of go, who knows, you know, like who's going to be there? What's going on? Obviously, like, I think offensive line, I would look to add depth or some type of, you know, maybe a starter there at that position. Yeah. Not that those guys played badly, because I think they did a really good job when you watch the tape. Mm-hmm. But you can, like, that's an easy way to make the team a little bit better, left tackle especially. Number two wide receiver, something I got my eye on, right? Quarterback, if by some miracle, there's a guy there that you feel really good about. And then on defense, like linebacker, you know, or like a flex linebacker, like a big nickel type of guy that can rotate in and kind of give you some speed.
JOK from Notre Dame.
Zaven.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Something like that. And then obviously, like, I know you got a whole bunch of pass rushers, but you can never be pass rusher poor in the NFL.
That's
right?
What I've been saying. We're losing Ryan Garrett there in this offseason.
That can light your hair on fire and can shows that natural pass rush ability. A couple of years ago, I was on a team and there was a practice squad guy who was shredding the starting tackle, and they just happened to let him go, get picked up on practice squad. And he's been a starter in the NFL. Now, this was this is 2012. So it wasn't like last year. It was like 8 years ago.
Right.
It was Mario Addison, who's been a starter.
Oh, yeah. He's been solid as hell.
For a long time. And if a guy's got that and he's there, like, come on down, man. We love pass rushers here. You know what I'm saying? So absolutely.
Right. So then that goes into my next thing. I know you said you're the GM. You'd like to keep your draft picks and kind of build through the draft and improve on strengths. If you see your guy in this quarterback class, I know everybody wants to say that their guy is Trevor Lawrence. You're going to have to give up so much to get Trevor Lawrence. But let's say that they love Justin Fields. Reports are that they do like Justin Fields. Let's say that they think that he's a leader and he's the guy who's going to take them to the next level and lead them for the next 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Is it worth it to move up, make an RG3 type deal where you're trading multiple ones and a two to move up and get this guy, or no?
So I'm a big – so, like, just look at the first round draft picks over the course of, like, the Washington football team history. Like, take a Trent Williams, take a LaRon Landry, take a, you know, Montez Sweat. Yeah. Like, think about what that does for the team. And then you don't get those guys. You have one player for those three positions, right? And you kind of say to yourself, well, what do we do now, right? Mm. So that guy's got to be worth three franchise players, in my opinion. Because that's what you're looking for in the first round. You're looking for a franchise,
look at it,
organizational changing player. Yeah. And if you feel that he's the guy, then do it. But you got to feel really darn good about it, right? Like, the only guy I felt that way about even close would be Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? Like, that's the closest I've ever felt. And granted, like, you know, he's not in the NFL anymore. But when he was in there, he showed why you feel that way.
Right.
You know,
there's rumors. There's rumors he might come back. There's rumors
I would love
he's
it,
getting
man.
The old itch.
So awesome. I'm such a big Andrew Luck fan. I hope he comes
back. It sounds like he's got a trumpet in his throat. I absolutely love Andrew Luck.
Now, best quarterbacks do.
So, Logan, you say that, right? You talk about how making sure that guy, it has to be able to be worth three positions, right? It has to be able to elevate you if you're going to give up that draft capital.
Yep.
My question to you is, the hypothetical trade for Deshaun Watson is 2 firsts, 2 seconds, and then there was being talked about with possibly 2 defensive players. Now, in your opinion, do you think that Washington could sustain still a great defense with giving up 2 possible starters on defense by going to get Deshaun Watson? Do you think that's a good recipe?
I don't think so. I think Deshaun is, of the players in my 10-year careers that I played with, is the guy that I would be – I'm the most excited about. He's young. He's athletic. He's a charismatic leader. He's an awesome human being, like a philanthropist, like great dude, no ego, very – like just – I can't say enough positive things about him. So there's nobody who's – like I put my Deshaun Watson jersey on before I go to bed every night, and I'm like, hope he comes here because here we go. But – you got to think about, like, can he take this roster, take a whole bunch of pieces out of it, and you insert him here, and elevate it, right? And I don't think there's anybody who could do that, right? Very, very few people that could do that. Look at Houston right now. Like, he had his best year in his entire professional career. And that roster is gutted right now. And they are, and like, he did his best, but you need pieces around you. It's a team game, right? So, as much as I want him here, as much as I think it'd be awesome for the city and great for the organization, just he's the right kind of guy, man, like that is a big ask for a young player like that.
Right. And I guess we're going to stick with some hypotheticals here. Say a guy like say they do go and acquire a guy like Sam Darnold, and they can fill a couple of these needs through the draft and free agency, like middle linebacker or any type of linebacker, and a number 2 wide receiver. What do you see the ceiling being for this team in 2021?
Well, I think everyone should be really excited about this team. I mean, he took a team that everyone thought was going to be 4-12, and then they ended up making a playoff run. Granted, the division was terrible, but I think they showed you that this division's down. It's going to be down. No quarterback in Philly. I think you got to worry a little bit about the Jets, but the Cowboys look a little rough. Who knows what's going to happen with Dak, right? So to me, the Giants are the team that's kind of like the competitive, and how do you stack up with them? Can you outrace them? And right now I think defenses are pretty similar, and it's like, what about Daniel Jones, right? Is he the franchise guy there? And do we have a quarterback that you would trade for Daniel Jones right now? And my answer is no. And that's maybe not saying much. And if you get a guy who you feel good about at the position, who's better than Daniel Jones, right? Then all of a sudden the Washington football team becomes the class of the division, and we're a perennial playoff team, right? So I think that's the way I'm looking at this offseason, the way I'm looking at the team and how excited I am. Like, if this offseason goes well, they are ahead of schedule. Like, they're way ahead of schedule. In my opinion, they're 2 years ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
So if they can kind of capitalize on this surge of young talent developing on the roster, awesome, great, fantastic. They got to capitalize on it though. And that's why this offseason is so important.
Now, this isn't going to happen, and we're stating hypotheticals. This is just to shut down Washington football Twitter. They blew up yesterday because they found out Dak Prescott follows Washington NFL on Twitter. There's two places that he follows. It's the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington football team. There's no chance Dak comes here. If he does, though, is he that quarterback that makes us better?
So Dak, to me, is like this – I don't want to say he's fugazi, but he's like not as good as people think, right?
Thank you.
Look at that skill position group that he's got
there.
That's
insane.
Like,
insane.
Look what Andy Dalton did with that skill position group, like in the last four or five games of the season, right? They looked crisp. And so, yeah, I think Dak's a good player. But is he that top five guy in the NFL that everyone's like, wow, yeah, that team's immediately better? Like, Aaron Rodgers comes here? Yeah. Tom Brady comes here? Yeah, awesome. You know, maybe Deshaun Watson, some of these other guys? Yeah, but he's not in the mix for me there. And he's going to – he would struggle tremendously in this system because there's just not enough talent around him to kind of make him look better than he is. So even if he was going to come here – and, like, maybe he's coming here for a handshake, then I'm all for it. But I doubt it, right? If they got to mortgage the entire franchise to get him here, I think that's a poor decision.
He's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, with the pending free agents for the Washington football team, you know, you talk about this being a team that needs to be able to rebuild in certain aspects, need to create depth and everything. They have some free agents. Everyone's going to say, yes, you need to. Brandon Scherff, in your opinion, do you think that they need to re-sign him? Or is there anybody else that's going to be a pending free agent that you think that they is very important that they do re-sign?
If you need the list, Kyle has the list.
I can give you the list if you need it.
Yeah, give me a list.
Okay, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, outside linebacker, Ronald Darby, Reuben Foster, Ryan Anderson, and then Fabian Kerrigan. Moreau as well.
Yeah, so I'd say Darby probably my number one priority coming into this. Like, and I would not have said that before this season, but he played at a really high level. Jack Tucker did a great job kind of elevating his game or him buying into the system, whatever it was, him kind of refocusing, million variables. But of those people, like, that's a guy because I think he's going to be at a fairly favorable price point, very doable. The guy that's the big question mark there is Scherff, I think. Yeah. You know, I think because he played really well. He was banged up a lot of the year.
First-team All-Pro.
Yeah. And I don't know if he's first-team All-Pro, but he played really well.
Yeah, he was voted.
He played really, really well.
Right.
And, you know, like, you turn on his tape and everyone's kind of, oh, he's not as good as he was. And, like, he's playing at a high level. Like, he's, you know, with a guy with a torn knee and a messed up shoulder, like, he was locking dudes down all season long. And, you know, maybe he was top two last year. Maybe he's top four this year. But still, very small discrepancy between how he was playing. Right. So, that's the guy that's going to be expensive, right? And, like, he's been hurt a little bit over the last couple of years. Like, do you feel comfortable giving that guy a lot of money? Like, how happy he's going to be here? That to me is the big question. There's other guys, like, maybe, you know, Pierre Lewis is a kind of a special teams role guy, a backup guy who knows all the positions. He's been in the system for a year. If price is right, you know, if they feel good about him. And it's always, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So, you know, instead of kind of rolling the dice on somebody else, like, you know, he's – you know what he can do. You know what he can't do. You feel comfortable with him, bring him back. So it's unfortunate that Ryan Kerrigan is on that list. That's my guy, and I love him. But, you know, I think that's probably the right call unless he comes back for, again, the right kind of paycheck. So.
And then to finish this up, Logan, the last thing I have to ask you, the awards was over the weekend. Chase Young won Defensive Rookie of the Year. But most importantly, with Ron Rivera not winning, I know Alex Smith won Comeback Player of the Year. Everyone knows it's absolutely amazing what he did, and he definitely deserved it. But in your opinion, do you think it was validated that Ron Rivera was fifth on the list for Coach of the Year?
So who was ahead of him? That's the question.
Kevin Stefanski, Brian Flores. Yeah. Who was the other?
Was it Mike Tomlin on there?
I think Tomlin was on there, yes.
Whoops, yeah, that's a tough one. So I would say the thing about Jack Del Rio that's tough in that spot is that he's an older coach, a former head coach. And
Sean McDermott, I'm sorry, the Bills coach.
Sean McDermott. Like, I think those guys, when you talk about those guys, I think they are very deserving of being ahead of him, right? And, you know, I think all, you know, Flores, obviously the thing he did in the Miami, great job. McDermott.
I love Flores.
You know, Bill's outstanding season.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it's kind of a lot to expect that he's going to be jumping people who are younger coaches, head coaches, and have had a big impact on organizations almost immediately. Not to say that his impact wasn't big here, but it was kind of, you know, the whole staff was new here. So how much of that was a reflection of a new staff, Ron Rivera, Scott Turner, all these different variables. Not super surprising to me, but I thought he did a great job this year, and it's good. I'm glad that he got a vote. You know, whoever voted for him, good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Logan, I can't thank you enough for being able to take the time out to join us yet again. Wanted to get your opinion on the offseason and the draft and everything, and you did a fantastic job as usual, my friend. If you guys haven't already, go follow Logan Paulson on Instagram. All you got to do is search for his name, and it'll pop right up. He's a film evaluator and great personality. Logan, thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a lot of fun being on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. You have a good one, brother.
Hey, take it easy, guys.
All right, everybody. So now let's talk about a little of the Super Bowl and what we think is going on. Because, dude, I'm telling you, that was that was insane, what I witnessed.
Yeah. I just got an update. Nobody expected this. It just says the Super Bowl's TV rating was the lowest it's been in 15 years.
Yep. Yeah.
Even with COVID, with people not going to Super Bowl parties and having it at their house.
The lowest since the Colts versus the Bears Super Bowl, which is like crazy. That was a horrible Super Bowl.
But I will say Grant Paulson brought up a great point. I was listening to 106.7 when I had to go over and get my mic cables I left over at the shop after the Super Bowl show. And he made a good point. Like, there really isn't a number for the streaming services. A lot of people have been cutting cords everything like that. So the number might be inflated there. But Grant also brought up a great point saying, like, everywhere else on TV, their numbers are down this year. So you kind of have to compare it with everyone else and what they're doing.
So weird to me with everybody being home all the time.
You're absolutely right. But
it's crazy.
But first thing, though, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
Yes, RIP.
Rest in peace to Marty, a former head coach here, who he said would not be a Washington head coach. And then Dan Snyder showed up with his helicopter, and that quickly changed, and it didn't last very long. But rest in peace, Marty. I wanted to get your guys' opinions on the Washington Post article that came out with a headline, just the headline, not the actual article, a headline, talked about how bad he was in that he wasn't winning in the playoffs, essentially, as they were announcing that he had passed away. Hull, what did you think about that?
Obviously, that's like horrible. Like, why would you even bring that up in a headline? You know, I mean, obviously you're trying to get, I'm not gonna say it's clickbait, but it's like basically clickbait. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty much clickbait, because I'm pretty sure, like we were talking about earlier, where the article probably had nothing to do about his playoff wins or anything, that probably about how he was a good guy, a great NFL coach, and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely just to get more clicks, but that's like a horrible way and like a despicable way of trying to get more clicks on an article, because at the end of the day, he didn't get it done in the playoffs, but a lot of his playoff losses weren't really because of him. Like, it was because of Ernest Byner fumbling the ball with the Browns.
Right.
In their 14-2 season, they missed a field goal at the end of the game. I think it was like Nick Novak or somebody like that. Like, that's not really on him. That's on the players in that situation. So, again, it's kind of messed up. It's not even kind of. It is messed up to even put that in the headline of an article.
It was absolutely ridiculous. You couldn't wait a week, like, to be able just to say that about the guy. Like, why would that even be included? Like, the fact that that went through multiple people's eyesights and they were like, yeah, that's good, put that out there. Absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. Why do you got to crap on the guy as you're announcing his passing? I just found that in bad taste, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, let's move on to our fan question.
I didn't care about it either.
I know you didn't, because you were too busy typing. But
no, well, I was looking up a stat that I was going to bring up in my rebuttal. Sorry, but nope, not anymore. Nope, not anymore.
So the Colonel has some great questions for us.
Always does.
And I'll try to preface it the best way I said. Chris Cooley was making noise about taking Derek Carr over Sam Darnold. And he reworded it by saying, the bottom line is Cooley says Carr protects the ball better. He doesn't know if he agrees with him based on all the fumbles that he had this year in the pocket. So what do you think about that, Hall?
I mean, can't really disagree with that, just based off the fact that I think Derek Carr has the highest fumbles from a quarterback, either him or Daniel Jones, one of those two. But so that's definitely a problem. He doesn't really throw a lot of interceptions per se. Touchdown to interception ratio is pretty good. The thing I will say about Sam Darnold is he's second as far as pressures and your dropbacks by quarterback. He's second in that list in the last two seasons behind Russell Wilson. Mm. Obviously, Russell Wilson is complaining about getting hit too much and them having the offensive line in Seattle. And you see, obviously, he's a great talented quarterback, but they can't get out of the first round of the playoffs, let alone in the playoffs, because the offensive line. I would say the same thing about Sam Darnold. Not really a lot of weapons, and when they weren't really healthy. No offensive line in front of him to do anything. But when he did have time, like Logan Paulson said, that first round arm talent is there. The accuracy is there. So I would be good with either one of them. I would probably go Sam Darnold because he's a little bit cheaper than Derek Carr would cost. And then we could build a little bit more through the draft around Sam Darnold, and he's younger. But, yeah, I mean, he makes a good point with the fumbles.
Yeah, look, and that's where my mindset was. There was a Jets reporter that came on JP and Brian Mitchell's radio show on 106.7 yesterday, and he just bludgeoned Sam Darnold. And he said, you know, he has the WTF kind of throws every game. There's always those throws going down. Now, does that offset Derek Carr's fumbles? I'm not sure about that. But the one aspect is that Darnold is younger. And so, look, as much credit to Cooley, I know he's a great film evaluator and player evaluator. I don't agree with him there. I think that Darnold is probably the better option in that scenario. I know that Sam Darnold can get better with the stupid throws. You know, anybody can. It happens with quarterbacks. But the physical ability to be able to hold on to the football inside the pocket, having that hand size, is something that you can't fix, to be perfectly honest with you. So in my opinion, I would rather go with Darnold in that scenario. What did you think about that, Reed?
It's tough because obviously Derek Carr has had more success. But like you said, those fumbles, that's pretty worrisome how much he fumbled. I mean, even Cracky brought it up when he was talking to you about it. And he used that as an argument against why he doesn't want to keep Derek Carr around. But
then he tells us he deserves two first-round picks.
But Sam Darnold is just such so intriguing, I feel like. A lot of people, I think, really do kind of look at him in this – like, well, was it really Darnold? Like, he only came out, his scouting report's still fresh in our mind. We know what we saw on tape. But was it really Sam Darnold's fault that he didn't do that good? I mean, yes, he does have some pretty bad tape, but he didn't have playmakers. I mean, Jameson Crowder was good. He never really had an offensive line. Mekhi Becton was decent. And then on top of that, you throw in Adam Gase. And it's just like everybody who leaves Adam Gase gets better. And by everybody, I mean Ryan Tannehill. And so people are thinking, hey, maybe you can hit gold, maybe lightning will strike twice. You get this guy under a real coaching staff.
Right.
You can get him. But, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I don't really remember the exact question, but, yeah, you know.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Colonel. That was a fantastic question. Now, Lauren Stern, he said, Kurt Warner was an undrafted free agent out of college, played arena football, and was stocking grocery shelves when the Rams got him. He had a Hall of Fame career. Why can't we give Heinicke a chance? Why can't we focus on building around him? And I'll start with you, Hall.
Well, Kurt Warner had the measurables. Like you just said, he played in the CFL. He had I think he played in arena football or something like that. So he had been doing other things. Obviously, he was out of football for a little bit, but he had the size and the kind of arm talent that can lead him in the NFL. Taylor Heinicke, like I said, I love the dude. He played five great quarters of football, but there's also a reason why a lot of people haven't given him a chance. It's because even going back to college at Old Dominion, he's had injury history because he's a smaller guy. I think he's like 5'10", 5'11", something like that. Maybe a buck 70, a buck 80.
I think he's listed at 6'1". Okay, but he's maybe even 6'3", but it's 210 or something. I don't remember. Let me look it up. Either way, he's really small. Like, he's too light.
He's not really a durable guy that I don't think he can hold up a whole 16 NFL game schedule. Now 17.
Right.
And that's a valid argument.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why you don't build around a guy like
6'1", 210. Yeah. So he's thin for his size.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a great – I think he has a great, great, great career as a backup in this league, and especially for this team going forward because he knows the system. He obviously fits the system well. He can come right in, give you a spark on offense, and it's not really going to be a drop-off per se as far as play-calling ability because you can still have the whole playbook wide open for a guy like that. But as far as being the franchise guy going forward, I just don't see him being a 17-game durability type of quarterback.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you there. I think the injury was a concern for the Washington football team's brass, especially the front office. Like, yeah, you would love to be able to go with – and I look, after that playoff game, I was one of those people. I was like, dude, he deserves a shot back.
Yeah, right.
But he can't be the only shot back. You know what I mean by that? What did you think, Reed?
I think that if you really look at it, they kind of are making him the next Kurt Warner, and that's that they're giving him a shot. They're bringing him back. Kurt Warner didn't come back and all of a sudden he was anointed the starting quarterback. He filled in for Trent Green after Trent Green went down and got hurt. And then he proved once Trent Green came back, he was playing so well that they couldn't put Trent Green back in the game or they moved on from him or something after the season, whatever it was. So maybe they're do think that he could end up being that guy, but regardless, you still have to bring in somebody else because chances are he's not that guy. And but they might give him every opportunity to be. I mean, they could have him in a True. Quarterback one quarterback battle, but I still think that they're going to bring him back. But yeah, I don't know. It's so rare to happen.
Yeah, and then great question. Thank you, Lauren. Now, Paul Murphy asks, I looked at the significant role of playoff Lenny and Ronald Jones. I feel we need to upgrade our running back position to help give Gibson an explosive partner for a more balanced running game. Who in the draft or free agency do you like as another piece of our running back unit, Reed?
I really like another player that went to Memphis. That's Kenneth Gainwell, his old running mate. And just because when you look at Antonio Gibson, yes, he's a physical freak. He's fast, but he's bigger. He's 228, 6'1". Kenneth Gainwell, I believe, is listed at just under 200 pounds, but he's a flash. He's a lightning in a bottle type guy. He can do it all, and I think he really complements him well. And I think that he's somebody that could really be interesting in the third, fourth round and to really take a look at. Because you're right. I think that they love J.D. McKissic. But if something happens to one of those guys, you need to have another plan. And using a two-headed monster, I think, could be really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Two guys that I'm really keying in on, Khalil Herbert and Trey Sermon at Khalil Herbert at Virginia Tech, Trey Sermon at Ohio State, two guys you can add in the draft that would really help you and benefit you a lot. Ever since you talked about him last week, Hall, the running back from North Carolina.
Yeah, I didn't want to take him because I figured you'd say him.
I just looked at the Draft Network's player rankings today, and he shot up. And he's projected a second rounder now.
Both running backs from North Carolina are really good. Yeah, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. They're both – I would take either one of those guys.
So what do you think, Hall? What would you be looking at? I know last week you kind of talked about Devontae Freeman, but is there anyone else that you would want to bring in and add to this running back room?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams out of North Carolina. I heard one of the former players that is also going to this draft say that they were the captains of that team, the leaders of that team, leaders in the locker room. And that's like really, really hard to find when both running backs in your room are the leaders, heart and the soul of the team. So I think they're great character guys. They'd be like good additions. But another guy that's going to be probably a late rounder, maybe even undrafted, you can get for cheap, is a guy like from Oklahoma State, Chuba Hubbard. I think that he would kind of pair well with Antonio Gibson. Yeah. They're kind of the same back per se, but Antonio Gibson is probably better in the passing game. But he's a guy that can, if you bring back someone like J.D. McKissic, you have another guy like Chuba Hubbard can be a kind of a bigger bruiser type of guy, can relieve Antonio Gibson on second or third down, something like that here and there. So that's definitely a guy that I would maybe target in like the
round. Is it Chuba or is it Chuba? Because I always just say Chuba Hubbard because it sounds good rolling off the tongue.
Yeah.
It's like bubble baby bubble bumpers or whatever. Chuba Hubbard.
Fantastic question from Paul Murphy. Thank you, sir. Really do appreciate the support. Now our next question is from Payne, miserable Washington football team fan. I feel like there's a lot of us out there. Can you dive into the cornerback plans? Who to re-sign, draft, etc. He said, I know Fabian is a free agent, although he didn't play much last season. I also know Darby is a free agent and should be a priority re-sign, but he might have played himself into a larger contract offer from another team. And I'll start with you, Hall.
Yeah, Paulson hit it on the head earlier. I would definitely try to re-sign Darby. I know there was mutual interest after this season. I heard there was reported that he wanted to come back. He liked the team. He obviously likes the area. He's from the area. He's from Maryland. So I definitely think that would be number one priority as far as cornerback position. Obviously, you still got Jimmy Moreland in the slot. You just signed Kendler Fuller last year to that contract. Mm-hmm. He'll be back. So I definitely think they're going to go for another cornerback somewhere in the draft between maybe third to fifth round, somewhere around there, to add to the room. But I would definitely focus on getting Ronald Darby back. And if Fabian Moreau can somehow stay in the room and be in the mix as a rotational guy, I would love that too.
Yeah, there was one guy I've been watching film on. I've really been hoping that I get more opportunities to see his film because of these college guys. You're really at will of the providers on YouTube and everything. And Eric Stokes, the cornerback from Georgia, 6'1 guy, about 190 pounds. He's very interesting, a hard-pressed corner. I would love to have him added to the equation. And this is a great question because with Fabian Moreau possibly leaving and Ronald Darby, you know, wanting to return, the big question is how much is his cap hit going to be? Because then you have to talk about Brandon Scherff, in my opinion. It's like a trigger. To be honest, like if Brandon Scherff gets re-signed for 15, 16 mil per, I think Darby's out of the question. And one of the aspects of this is I look back to Carolina with Josh Norman. You know, they knew that front was formidable. They knew that front was great. And so they didn't need to overpay a corner to be able to stay there to keep their defense good. Is that how they're kind of viewing this cornerback situation? And that is a big question, in my opinion. But I will say I would love for them to re-sign Darby. I would like for him to take a team-friendly deal because this was the best year he's had since he was in Buffalo. Why would you – I know you want to go get your money. I know you want to get paid and help yourself out. But if you can, why wouldn't you not try to extend your career as much as possible and stay with this team and how well you've done with Chris Harris and your defensive back coach? So in my opinion, I think Darby is going to retain. What about you, Reed?
Yeah, I think that you definitely got to make it a point to retain Darby. And then I think that your top three corners are good, but you do need that versatile person. And Kyle, I think you're completely right. When to look at the draft, you know, the mid to late rounds, another person that interests me, literally not because of his play, because his play actually fell off this past year, but just because of his physical attributes. Israel Mukuamu. Israel Mukuamu. I know who was completely, he was completely shown up by J.C. Horn this season. Yes. J.C. Horn's first round pick, phenomenal. But Israel Mukuamu, before that, he was a projected first rounder. He's between 6'3 and 6'4. He's a big guy, tall, but he can move. It's surprisingly. Definitely is somebody that to keep an eye on if he's coming out. I got to double check. But just that length, somebody like that, and he can play inside as well. So just somebody that can match up with tight ends if you need him to. Maybe he could go back there, play a little safety, and play some corner. Because I don't think that there's a chance Fabian Moreau comes back.
Yeah, miserable Washington football team fan. That was phenomenal. Now, Mike has a great question for us. He said, Washington is hopefully getting stronger, and I used to love it when the East was the beast. Do you guys think the East is becoming that again, and will it happen anytime soon? I'll start with you, Reed.
I think that just after this past year, it's such like it's so hard to say that. Yeah, oh yeah, we're on our way. The East is on its way, but I do think that the East can definitely be good again. I mean, like Logan talked about it 2 years ago. I mean, you were to say that the Giants and the Washington football team are going to be kind of teams to watch, I would be kind of surprised. I'd say that you were lying, but Dallas also, they're getting Dak back and just having that offense, like Logan said, is going to be huge. They got to improve their defense, but then, and then you don't know what you're getting in Philly, but Jalen Hurts looked good at times. So I do think that the East has potential to be a good division again. Is it going to happen next year? I don't know, but within the next few years, I do expect them to be a very competitive division again.
Yeah, and look, when you talk about with Dallas losing Dak Prescott, if they do retain Dak, that team's going to be good again. Do I think they're going to be the juggernaut that they were before? I'm not entirely sure. We have to see how Dak looks when he comes back. And then Saquon Barkley returning back to the Giants.
Yeah, that's huge.
And Jalen Hurts was looking really good at the end of the season, was looking like a legit stud. And we don't know what's going on with Carson Wentz. I know everyone is expecting a trade this week. We don't know who to and what they're going to get in return. Because I'll tell you, if Carson Wentz goes to the Bears, if they get returned, Khalil Mack and possibly another first rounder.
They're not getting Khalil Mack and a first rounder for Carson Wentz.
They're asking for ones.
They're asking for Nick Foles, Tariq Cohen, and a pick, pretty much, essentially.
Yeah. Well, that's right. What I heard, but then I heard Tariq Cohen say that was a lie. Then again, Kendall Fuller also told people that it was a lie that he wasn't traded to Kansas City. And then he was like, oh, never mind. Yeah, it was.
I actually just checked with my agent. That's actually true.
Yeah, it is.
But seriously, though, I mean, that would be a smart move for Chicago to be able to do that if they really want to go get the quarterback that they have. So, look, you never know what's going to happen with this division. Do I think it's going to happen next year that they're going to be the best in the NFC that it has to offer? No, because of everything happening in the NFC West, I definitely think the NFC South is going to be heavily dominated by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that's going to be the division to beat. I know the Rams are really stocking up right now, but I think the East is probably going to be good probably in about 2 years. But for right now, Washington's going to dominate that. Do you feel the same way, Hall?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think they're probably about, depending on the quarterback play and how everything shakes out with all four teams' quarterback situations, I'd say they're maybe about 2 to 3 years away from being back to that kind of dominant division again, where every single week whoever you got to play in the division is going to get a tough battle. You're going to get, and now that they have what, 7 teams in the playoffs in each division, you maybe get 2, maybe 3 teams from the division coming out of it. So yeah, depending on the quarterback, how the quarterback situation shape out for every team, I would probably say it's about 2 to 3 years away from being that dominant East division again.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question from Mike, as always, great question. Now Tony Shivers actually bought some merchandise from the Burgundy Zone on Teespring. Yeah, you can find the link on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. We have it all for you. Look at Reed sporting it right now, the WT shirt. Dude, that thing is sick. Now, Tony's question is a great one. Ron is easily the best head coach in NFC East. Who do y'all think is the second best?
I think you – honestly, I'm a – because really, I mean, Mike McCarthy, no. And then Eagles, no coach, I forget his name. All I know is he can't talk during press conferences. I like Joe Judge. I really do like Joe Judge. I think Joe Judge is creative. I think if the story of Joe Judge getting into a fight with this offensive line coach is true, that elevates him even more in my book. The fact that he was strapping tennis balls to his defensive back's hands this offseason, I think he's just a fantastic throwback type coach. And that's sad that he's the second best coach in this division. But I do think New York got a decent coach, and he is going to be good down the line. But yeah, we have the best coaching staff by far.
Wholeheartedly agree. I mean, it has to be Joe Judge, even though he has to stop complaining about what the Eagles are doing in their play in their games. Yes, I do believe that to be the case. And look, I don't feel confidently saying that, and which is makes it such a great question. Because Mike McCarthy's cool, man, but he doesn't move the needle by any stretch, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, he's cool, but like without an Aaron Rodgers, what is he? He's just another fat guy on the sideline.
Yeah, he's just another Wade Phillips. Hey, what about you, Hall?
I mean, I can't argue that. Just like you said, based off the fact of Mike McCarthy, what have you done for me lately? Look with Joe Judge, you got the Giants ascending, and it's funny because I was one of those guys where like you see him doing press conferences, we're going to be the toughest team out there, we're going to fight to the end, doing all
and
that.
You look at him and you're like, yeah.
You're doing all that coach speak. And I found that so corny when coaches say that stuff, because it's like, these are grown men. Obviously, they're going to go out there and get 100% effort. They're going to be the toughest they can be, blah, 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 stuff like that. So it's like, they don't need to motivate them through like coach speak and stuff like that. Right. But I mean, look, he's got the Giants playing well and they believe in him. So I guess he's the second best.
The one tough coach in the NFL that I believe outside of Ron Rivera, because I think Ron Rivera will motivate the hell out of you, but like a guy who's going to talk about, we're going to go out there. I believe Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions, when he says that you're going to knock us down, we're going to get up, bite your kneecap off. You're going to knock us down again. We're going to get up, snap your femur. You're going to knock us down again. We're going to keep getting up until you fall. Like the fact that he said bite your kneecap off, I was just like, this guy's
who thinks of stuff like that? That guy gets it, dude. Good for you, Dan Campbell.
Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Imagine
and he's an offensive guy, too. It's just like crazy.
He's a former tight end. Yeah, that's weird, but,
And now a good question from Burroughs. Oi! From the DC Tweet Team podcast, who now him and Silver FX, the clothing supplier that we use for our merchandise over in Europe, they are going with the MFL, the minor football league that's starting up. So fantastic for them. Congratulations, Burroughs. His question is, the same debate which we had on their podcast, are we as a team going into the 2021 season win now or still building for the future? Some of the QBs linked tell him both. And what do you guys think about that, Reed?
But say that one more time. That
basically, are they in win now mode, or do you keep continue building? Do you go after a quarterback to put you over the top for a Super Bowl, or do you keep building?
I think that, like, look, Logan Paulson even said it. He said that we're 2 years further along in our rebuild than he thought. I think we're all kind of right there. We didn't think it would be a 1 year turnaround, and all of a sudden we're winning the division. Granted, it's 7-9, but I think you add a decent starter to this team, or you add somebody who can play well, then this team is going to be pretty good. So I think that Ron Rivera knows that. I think he knows the weaknesses. Look, you look at wide receiver, you look at linebacker, quarterback, those right there, and maybe you could throw offensive line in there just because, I mean, they don't have some big name guys, but you look at those positions and you're kind of like, all right, well, we get some guys, or we get one playmaker at each of those positions, all of a sudden we're there. Like we're a pretty good team. So I think that they are going to, Ron Rivera wants to win now. That was proven by him benching Haskins and going after the division.
Yep.
So they're in his mind, it's win now. He's going to try to win now.
Yeah, I do think it's win now. Do I think that they go all out and mortgage a future to get a quarterback right now? No, I do not believe that to be the case. I think they're going to play it smart. I think they're going to allow the market to kind of dictate what they're going to do. They're not going to be too desperate, and everything, they proved that with the Matt Stafford deal. I know everyone has said that they've linked them to every single quarterback conversation in here, but it's like I don't think it's going to – really be something that they're going to be keen in on, where saying we have to get him, we have to get him, we have to get him. I think they're going to wait for the best deal possible without mortgaging the future, and then they're going to pull the trigger on making that happen. So with our next question coming up, I'm going to bring him up, but with Russell Wilson getting into the mix, I think it really does devalue some of these quarterbacks and these teams that are wanting, like Derek Carr for 2 first-round picks and Carson Wentz and the Eagles wanting 2 first-round picks for him. It's going to devalue them by a lot because these other teams are going to be more enticed by guys like Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. So I definitely think that they're going to wait it out and then go ahead and do it. But you have to continue building. You have to be able to add as many pieces to this puzzle as possible, like Logan said. They don't have the wide receiver assets right now. Cam Sims is possibly going to be a free agent this year. Wide receiver is a very big need for this team. And then corner as well, and then linebacker, to say the least. So they got to keep the first-round picks, and they got to be able to go from there. What about you, Hall?
Yeah, well, first of all, to answer the question, I think that definitely are a win-now mode, and you can tell that because they tried to make an offer for Matt Stafford. They've been calling about, I guess, reportedly they asked about Jared Goff before he got moved. They're reportedly going to call and ask about Sam Darnold, or already have asked about Sam Darnold. So Right. They're definitely in win-now mode as far as, like, we need to get a quarterback that's going to not elevate the team, but that's going to, I guess, technically elevate the team and get that position sold, like solidly sold up, and we can build around the quarterback and the rest of the offense and the rest of the defense. And I've said this for, like, weeks ago. I'm of the belief that when does free agency start? March, like middle of March, right?
Yeah. Usually, like, yeah. March 15th or something like that.
So pretty much they have the next like 2 weeks or so to pretty much get the quarterback position sewed up. If they want to be able to attract any type of tier two, middle of the pack free agents and not really go bargain basement shopping again, which it worked out last year. So I'm not really going to hate on that idea. But if anyone has any hopes of getting like a, I know Allen Robinson is going to cost, but they did it last year to try to throw money at Amari, so You never know. Pretty much what I'm trying to say is if anyone wants any hopes of getting any type of good receivers here, they're going to get the quarterback position sewed up, and they got to do that in the next 2 weeks or so. So I expect them to make a move here shortly, and I'm hoping at this point, because everyone else on my list is gone, I'll go for Sam Darnold for a second or third round pick.
Yeah, and look, what I was basically trying to say, I said it terribly, was that, yes, they are in win-now mode. They're going to try to get the quarterback because they're going to do it in the smartest way possible without giving out a whole bunch of picks for it, like I've said before with Deshaun Watson and everything. Now, like I said before, talking about Russell Wilson, Jesse from the Bleeding Burgundy podcast, great podcast, has a question for us. Now that Russell Wilson has come out and said that he's unsure of his future, will social media ultimately go apeshit, even though it's a wet dream on him coming here? And I'll start with you, Hall.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you think Deshaun Watson is a pipe dream, then you might as well be like Pookie from New Jack City, because there's no way that Russell Wilson is getting coming here. Like, if you think giving up the farm is too much for Deshaun Watson, just think what Russell Wilson's going to cost. I mean, the dude is way more accomplished than Deshaun. Almost said Deshaun Jackson, more accomplished than him too. May more accomplished than Deshaun Watson. Obviously, Deshaun Watson's younger and has like a more time span, a more lengthy NFL career going forward, but. Again, Russell Wilson is a top one tier quarterback. It's crazy he's never got NFL MVP votes, but should be NFL MVP at some point in his career. And yeah, he's like an elite quarterback. So, I mean, I couldn't even imagine what the cost of that would be. So that's like out the question.
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. The only reason I'm excited about Russell Wilson saying let's get traded is because it's going to devalue everyone else.
Yep,
it's going to help Washington be able to keep as many draft assets as possible to get a quarterback, and that's what I really, really like about the situation. But I do not think Russell Wilson, because even when, like, what was it, like last offseason, Russell Wilson was like, it was being thrown out there that
there's a rumor that he was going to the Giants.
Yeah, you remember that?
Randomly. Yeah.
So if anything, he's going to go to like a place like New York or something like that. That
you
big
know
market.
It's future making up these rumors and trying to get back at him.
Hey, maybe that's what Sierra was talking to Roger Goodell about at the Super Bowl.
I guarantee.
Or it's Sierra throwing these rumors out here because she wants to go to like a big city. Big
She's
market.
Like, can I not live in this depressing place that rains all the time?
What about you, Reed? Do you think? What do you think about Russell Wilson?
I think, like, to fans and the media, like, yeah, it's gonna devalue all these quarterbacks. To people that are in the NFL, they know that it's not happening. There's no chance, so they're just to them, it's just like, we're just going to move on with our lives as normal. That rumor literally doesn't affect us at all because it's never going to happen. So we're not even going to try.
Right. And the fantastic questions from everybody. Thank you so much to Paul, to Lauren, Sean, and then Andy Burrows. Oi!
Oi!
Paul Murphy, Paint Miserable, Washington Football Team fan, Mike, Tony, Jesse, and the Colonel. Thank you so much, everybody. You guys were phenomenal today. Thank you. I really do appreciate all the fan questions and all the support. All right, everybody. I'm Kyle.
It's all...
Are you gonna
is he stuck?
Yeah, he's stuck. Are you going to respond?
Oh, okay. I was like, he hasn't breathed in like 10 minutes. I'm Mike too.
Yeah. I was frozen, but I'm back now.
Yeah.
Hey, back now. All right, everybody. We'll see you guys on Thursday. You're not going to want to miss it, dude. I'll tell you that right now. We have a fantastic guest lined up for you guys. You're not going to want to miss that show. All right, everybody. Washington Football. Woo! What's up, everybody? It's your man Kyle from the Burgundy Zone. I hope you enjoyed the last video as much as we did. If you like what you saw, please like the video by clicking the thumbs up symbol and subscribe to the channel. It really helps us continuing to do what we do and making great content for y'all. If you want to stay up to date on new episodes, make sure you click on the notification bell, and I'll see you guys next time.